Welcome to Between Two Racks with Mike and Sean.
A show all about hunting, fishing, trapping, the outdoors, and everything in between.
At this time, we would like to give a shout out to our sponsors, Big Country Outfitters,
Antler Springs, Skulls and Mounts,
and Mike Jones Knife and Tool. All these links can be found on our website, between2racks.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back.
How you doing, Mike?
Good, good. It's been a while. This is we're finally getting back online here after about a month and a half.
Been a crazy fall for both of us, eh?
It's been very, very busy.
We've been going just flat out. We haven't had much time to do any recordings, so
no. So we're excited to come back to you all.
Things are slowing down now, but still
busy.
Still busy.
Well, I'm just really excited to now be sleeping indoors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys got some nasty cold weather up there, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the coldest you had?
We got up one morning there and we hit the old minus 20 in a sleeping bag. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty chilly. Actually, we had a Texas hunter. He had a few years on him. Tough old bugger, though.
Good
and yeah. But he actually told us that he ended up in the bottom of his sleeping bag to stay alive.
Yeah.
So it was a little bit chilly. But that's, we never really know when it comes to the weather. Sometimes, like last fall this time, I mean, it was open water everywhere. I was taking a look was on my Facebook, and it, you know how it kind of shows, you know, this is what was happening last year at this time.
Yep.
And it was warm. Like, it was like t-shirt weather.
I remember this time last year when we got our moose, it was almost too warm to hang meat.
Yeah.
And that's really unusual for
the caribou here. And so is 20 below.
Yeah.
That early.
Yeah.
So,
and this year everything froze solid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad to be back indoors. It's, and I'm glad to get going on these podcasts again.
Mm-hmm. We're going to be a little rusty, but we'll get whipped back into shape.
Just a little rusty.
So what do we got new in our, little book of stuff here?
Well, throughout these next few podcasts, I think we're going to be talking a little bit about each one of our hunts and some of the different stories. And we've always got some interesting tales and campfire stories to tell people. And, but one of the things I think we should kind of touch on is, we had a great opportunity to try some new gear, and, some of that new gear came from our friends at Monster Camo.
I know, it's pretty cool stuff, eh?
You like it?
Yes, sir.
Good.
So
currently the market is flooded with stuff, and there's a lot of different gear kind of producers out there. And, I think we more than just about anybody else out there. And when I say we, I mean, you know, guides, out there, we see a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of the good stuff. We see a lot of the stuff that's not so good. Some stuff that works, some stuff that doesn't seem to work. And so, I think coming from us, the fact that we give this our stamp of approval is kind of a big deal.
Yeah. No, all the stuff that I tried out, I liked it and worked good for me. Still, you know, held up all our travels there and held up.
And no, it held up really good. And really, you know, I think I got kind of started sometime just after mid-September and just got home here a few days ago. And so I've been using it straight through. So literally putting this stuff... You know, somebody would have to probably hunt for the next 5 to 7 years to put on as much time as I put on, and it all held up.
Exactly.
You know, it all held up really well. So I think big shout out to those guys. It was great stuff. We're definitely going to kind of take more of a podcast show, and we'll kind of do more of a breakdown. Mm-hmm. We just really wanted to kind of, you know, let everybody know out there that we use this stuff, mm-hmm. and it was really good.
And thank you, Monster Camo.
Yes, thank you, Monster Camo.
Stuff.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we've got, we're going to keep coming to you. We've got a lot of stories, about the fall hunts and Sean's going to quickly kind of outline some of them here and talk a little bit about, what you get to look forward to.
Well, a few of the things we did is, Amy and I went, elk hunting. Elk hunting was a little slow, but she did get herself a wolf. She'd never shot a wolf before, so she did, manage to get a wolf.
And cool. That's always good.
We're going to get the hide tanned for her and that. So we did the skull up here a little while ago. And then talk a bit about some of my hunters that I had.
Yep.
You know, some pretty wild guys from Florida and another guy from New York. So they were all lots of fun. We had a lot of great adventures with them. My son, He shot his first deer this year.
Cool.
4-point buck.
That's great.
We got a moose the other day. Amy got a moose. Oh, I got a moose up north.
Busy season.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, we got some late season hunts coming up too. Just some late deer season, elk season, wolf hunting and trapping seasons firing up here too. So
cool. So we're gonna have lots of great stuff to talk about.
Yeah, you betcha.
I'm looking forward to it. And for me, busy season. Obviously, a noteworthy hunt for me would have been with Sam. Sam Terrell, it was a great time. And I'll talk a little bit more about that hunt on another podcast here. But yeah, same thing. Busy season, lots of clients. It was good. We had a lot of laughs. I had a couple of clients from Hawaii and from a couple of different islands. And they were a hoot.
Yeah.
And they were a lot of fun.
And that was... through the cold weather. Was it turned cold then?
No, it hadn't yet. It was, no? There was times we ended up with a little bit of snow, but we're talking just freezing temperatures. But to these guys, I mean, this was Antarctica.
Yeah.
I mean, they just couldn't believe it. I mean, they showed up back at the cook tent, walking from their tent to the cook tent. They looked like the Michelin man when they got in there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They thought we were nuts, but really super, super good guys. Lots of good, lots of good stories there as well. Yeah. So,
got a couple bear stories too.
Yes.
Go over those.
Lots to talk about. So one of the other tools that we would have used out there or it could even fall under gear would be our knives.
Our knives.
And we've got a very special guest here with us.
So let's introduce our guest, Mike from Mike's Knives and Tools. Did I get that right?
That's close. That's pretty close, yeah.
Close?
He'd been planning for this, too.
Yeah.
I saw you wind up for that, too.
It was like a big swing and a miss. Yeah.
So, you tell us.
Mike Jones Knife and Tool will get you there, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Cool, so either Google it or...
Or my website's MikeJonesKnifeAndTool.com or...
Perfect.
Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. I think I even have a Twitter account, but that's just for posterity.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool. Right on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming out here today.
Am I your first guest?
You're our first guest.
This is your first three-way. This is exciting. Right.
This is.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know about the whole three-way thing, but yeah, this is.
Yeah, well, you got to try everything, right?
Yeah, everyone's a little gay.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully it goes well.
Those boys from Florida, that was their favorite one.
Oh?
Yeah. The first time they met Mike there, not Mike Jones, Mike.
Mike. Me, Mike.
Our Mike. Yes. Yeah. Anyways, so Mike, give us a little background on yourself there.
I grew up in Ontario, born and raised, and escaped to British Columbia for a season in Whistler, which turned into 9. And then, once that got too expensive to live and I was working more than I was partying, I moved up here to the central BC, to the Quesnel area.
Cool.
And always did a lot of carpentry and that sort of thing, and then started getting into knives, I guess. Started building knives. Have you guys ever been to the night market in Vancouver?
No.
It's a great big market down there, and it's at nighttime. It's kind of cool. And,
oh, yeah.
And they've got a tent down there that sells 2-for-1 super crappy knives. And at the time, my buddy and I didn't know any better, so we each got a couple of crappy knives. And he mentioned that he was planning on blowing the handle off of one of them and making his own, which had never occurred to me before. Mm-hmm. So I do what you always do when you want to learn something new, is I jumped on YouTube, and before you know it, I'm belly deep in a bunch of videos about making knives, and it looked pretty accessible, so I tried it out. And before I knew it, I had... a booklet of sketches of different shapes and stuff of knives. It was really neat once I realized I could make anything into any shape into an actual knife. So I kind of took off from there.
And now that's you just make knives.
Yeah. Right? So I started about 4 years ago. That was my fateful trip to the night market. And then it was kind of evenings and weekends and that sort of thing for a long time. And then I guess I started... I started making more money doing that than I was timber framing at the time. So I started making more money doing knives than I was doing it from home. So it made more sense to just dive in
yeah,
well, face first into
that's
making.
That's pretty awesome when you can, you know, when you can make a living out of something that you love to do. You know,
it's I feel super super lucky to be able to do it for sure.
Yeah,
especially because we got a young one at home now, so I can be around more for him and take him off of mom's hands.
Yeah, for well her. That yeah. You know, I love working at home when I'm doing my taxidermy and stuff like that, just for that reason. You know, I can be here for the kids and that.
Yeah, but and the whole being your own boss thing is a big bonus too.
Dragging my ass down to the mine every day, man, I can't.
Putting in long days working for some guy guiding.
Yeah, yeah, so.
A slave driver.
Someday I'll maybe stay at home and do what I love, but that's super awesome that you're.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really fortunate that it's working so far.
And a little segue, not to jump in there, but what's really kind of interesting here, and again, I'm going to be really careful about name dropping, except for Sean, I'll drop your name. So, kind of the way we all kind of ended up getting to know one another was I'd actually contacted Sean and said, "Hey, I've got this special project I want to do. I want to get a knife built. I want to get a really nice one built and something usable, but something really nice, something very unique." And it was actually Sean that suggested that I contact you. And I had no idea. Like when we were talking on the phone, I was thinking, man, where is this guy located? He's going to be in some crazy part of the province or Canada or wherever. And so we started talking. And still at the time when we were talking, I had no idea. And we kept talking. And then finally, it was either Facebook or Instagram, but something where Quinnell came up. And that's when I found out that you know, lived like 40 minutes away from me.
Yeah, yeah. It's so crazy how that worked out.
It's nuts.
Yeah, I got this email one day when I got home from work that said, "Hey, I'm Mike, and he's got a pretty high profile client that he wanted a knife for." And so that was actually a really big.
And we can actually, you know, we can say it was for Joe. I'm okay with that.
It was for Joe. Yeah. Yeah.
So for Joe Rogan, anybody out there listening, it was Joe Rogan that we had to make this knife for.
That was a huge boost for me, for sure. Mike sent the knife down to Joe, and after a little while, Joe posted it on Instagram, and that was a major kickoff for me. I got a big boost from that. So I'm sure Joe listens to the podcast. So thanks a lot, Joe.
Yeah, he might.
He will one day.
He will one day when he's really, really bored. He's a super good guy. He's Joe Rogan is a really super nice guy. So yeah, he might.
He contacted me before he posted it online. He said, "Hey, I just wanted to say thanks. Mike sent me this knife, and I really appreciate that you did a." He was really very kind about it and everything. That was really cool.
Cool. That's awesome, eh?
Yeah. So it was just really funny the way it all comes around, and now we're all sitting here.
And how I heard about you was through Big Ian.
Oh yeah,
Ian Coombs.
Yeah,
we were up north elk hunting, and he was telling me about his bushfucker, right?
And for anybody listening, the bushfucker's a tool that we're about to talk about. It's, you know. Okay.
So anyways, he's telling me about this and he's showing me pictures of it. And I'm like, man, that's pretty cool. I'd love to have one of those for the trap line. And so that's when he gave me your contact.
Oh, wow.
But it was, I don't know. I think I had contacted you and asked about it. And then it got put on the back burner for a while. And then when Mike asked me about the knives and stuff, and
Ian actually to bring him actually into the whole mix, he provides me with most of the steel to make the bushfuckers too,
because
they're made from a big harvester bar and processor head, big piece of logging equipment. It's basically a giant chainsaw bar, and he owns a couple of them. He knows lots of guys that own processors, and so he gets them to collect the old bars when they bend or get ground down too much, and I get a really good deal on those, so that's right. Thanks, on. Ian.
What other kind of metals you?
I like to use a lot of reclaimed steel. Being from the central BC here, we get a lot of old timber mills and things like that. So the big old round saw blades are really good steel.
And you said the older ones are the best, right?
The older ones were better. Yeah. Plus, they usually have some really cool character in them. They'll be kind of pitted, and I try to save some of that into the face of the knife a little bit, and people like the story behind that.
Now, I seen a picture you had posted one time of a whole stack of handsaws.
Yeah.
What were you building with those?
for those, they're same sort of thing. They're all old, and I'll cut some pieces off of them to kind of test out
just different styles
if they're good steel.
Yeah.
They're really, really thin though. So what I'm gonna do with those is it's called a San Mai, and it's kind of a sandwich of three different steel or two different steels, but it's basically a steel sandwich.
Oh yeah.
And with a bandsaw blade on either side. Bandsaw blade's got nickel in it, so it doesn't rust so bad. Yeah, the big yeah. wide bandsaws, yeah.
Yeah, I got one of those. I got a chunk of that welded in a circle for a fire pit.
Yeah, perfect. They're good for that, yeah.
So, yeah. I often wondered what you were doing with that, because you had a whole stack of old saw.
Yeah, some old lady was, her old man passed away, so she was selling off stuff, and he collected them. He had like 100 of them or something stashed away, so I went and grabbed a whole scoop of them. I saved the ones that were still worth saving, because I like the old tools.
They're and cool you're always farting around with old axes too, eh? I had that axe out.
Yeah, I try to restore the old axes, the ones that are worth it, and old hand tools you pick up from yard sales and stuff. It's tough to find time to do that these days.
Yeah.
Making knives, but that's a great problem to have.
Cool.
Being too busy.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely. So when, as far as it goes to your market, you know, where is it kind of international? Is it big down to the U.S.? Is Canada?
It's becoming more international. Yeah. Mostly around North America for sure.
Right.
My wife, Carrie, got me for my birthday a big map of the world, and we put it on a pin board. And so I've been putting pins into all the different, every town that I send one to, which is kind of cool. But it gives you a real good visual of where most of them are going. But
that's great.
Mostly North America. And yeah, a few down to Australia and a couple to Europe now. So that's kind of neat.
Cool. Well, I mean, we've been using the hell out of them, abusing them actually.
Abusing, yeah.
Yeah, abusing. We've been abusing the shit out of them.
A lot
we do.
Than anybody.
We do. Imagine. So mine this year, I mean, it just held up amazing. And so I've got the Bowhunter.
The Bowhunter out right model, now. Yeah. That's my most popular model for sure.
Yeah. I mean, she's a great all round knife. Definitely skinning big animals, knocking the bark off a moose. This is real handy. And what I did this year is the sternums, even on some of the bigger, older bulls. You know, we got this thing started and then used, you know, we'd search around till we found a, you know, some type of a wooden bat, and we would beat this thing through every single sternum, you know, just to check it out. And she held up amazing.
Yeah, that's a common technique in bushcraft and camping and stuff called batoning. And you can, a lot of people break down firewood into kindling the same way.
Yeah.
Stick it on top of a piece of wood and smash it through with another piece of wood, and it works really effectively.
Well, as you can see, I've got mine out, and I really look after it. I keep it nice and shiny.
You don't wash it too often, I notice.
It's memories, man. It's all memories.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It's worked out really, really well. I've definitely put it through its paces, and it hasn't disappointed.
How's your hand?
Good.
Not long ago, you sent it through a couple of digits.
Yeah. You know, in the beginning, this is definitely a larger knife than I typically would use. And so when you get used to a smaller blade, you know, I would forget where that blade was. And, you know, at one point, the top of my knuckle looked like a mushroom cap stuck to the blade. And I didn't know. I was skinning away, and I looked, and I seen this thing stuck to it. And I had two hunters there with me. And I said, well, what the hell is that? And I looked down at my hand, and I had taken the top. I mean, she just cut through surgically. Didn't even realize it. Of course, they were almost sick. Like, they just couldn't believe it. And so I just kind of laughed that off and wiped my knuckle off the blade and kept working. And then before I knew it, I had slipped one more time, and it was actually part of my thumbnail that ended up slowing the blade down. So they definitely keep an edge, hold an edge, and it's not easy to damage it. So
that's one of my favorite stories to tell people. I get a lot of questions about my heat treating and how well the blades hold up. A lot of my clients will be, they're coming from the department store kind of knife. I don't want to name any brand names or anything, but they'll go down to their favorite department store and pick up their $30-$40 knife, and they're not impressed with how well it holds an edge, and they'll be sharpening it 4 or 5 times to skin out an animal.
Yeah.
And so that's one of my favorite stories is, this guide buddy of mine cleaned a couple of bear in his own, two of his own fingers with it.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know what? And even taking this and, like when we get started on a bull, you know, of course, we start opening them up, and one of the first big major cuts is going to be that sternum cut, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to beat this knife through that and then I'm going to be done with that, finish gutting the animal, and then skin the entire thing.
Well, another thing too, like when you're skinning with a lesser grade knife, as soon as you touch any bone,
yeah,
like if you're
even the hair,
yeah, well, yeah, the hair.
I mean, hair's a nightmare on a blade.
Hair will dull a blade, yeah. But like if you're wringing the leg or something to
yeah,
take the leg off, or you know, you, as soon as you touch that bone, that, you know,
yeah, so
the edge is gone.
That's so. Right. So for anybody who's going to try and picture this, I mean, when we're cutting, of course you're cutting through for the most part joints, you know, except mm-hmm. for the sternum. But you know, so if you're like Sean was saying, wringing a leg, so you're breaking that joint, you're still touching bone, you're still hitting bone, and a lot of times, I mean, that's it, you know, you're stopping and pulling out your sharpener, and you know, there's times like this last hunt, you know, it was so cold that by the time we got back to the moose the following day, it was like we couldn't take care of it all. We had to go back up and pack the rest of them out, but he was frozen. Mm-hmm. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to gut them and get them opened up and start to get the cooling process, which that's not the big deal, but I still want to get, I've got a fellow with me that's, you know, 80 years old and mm-hmm. he's getting cold standing there, you know, we got to make this happen and get him back down to some sort of warmth. And, so I don't have time to sit there and make three little cuts and then have to sharpen my knife. Like I've got to get this done. Like it's got to happen now. And, so like I said, to, you know, to start that opening cut and then to literally take a, like you were saying, batoning, and take that club and beat this knife through a big thick sternum and then finish my job. So getting inside there and, you know, cleaning out that animal and getting them opened up to cool, you know, it, there's other knives out there that are not going to do that job. Mm-hmm. They can't. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible.
There's a few different materials that are bad on edges and knives that people don't necessarily know about. Like for one thing, a plastic cutting board. I make a lot of kitchen knives as well. And plastic cutting boards are horrible on a knife. It's way better to use a wooden one if you've got one. Obviously, you can't for a lot of meat because it'll contaminate. But
so what about for the people? I've just talking about kitchen knives there quickly. I've got a piece of what is that polished like granite or some damn thing they make cutting boards out of?
Oh yeah,
have you seen that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was told at the time I didn't understand. They said, oh yeah, and this will never dull your knife. I thought, how is that possible?
Wow, that's maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. About, I mean, I've never taken granite. This one and run it across a bunch of times, but if you kind of come through and bounce into, I mean, it seems like a hard surface, but yeah, I've had people tell me that, oh no, it doesn't really damage it, you know, unless you're, you know, kerplinking away at it, but otherwise, if you kind of cut through material and just kind of, like, say you were cutting through vegetables or something and just kind of drug the knife across it, that it won't damage the blade. I don't understand how that works. But
I don't understand.
With plastic, it tries to roll the blade over a little bit. Like with wood, you kind of cut into it.
Right.
But yeah, plastic tries to roll the edge. So you talk like
those plastic, white plastic ones I got here behind me?
Yeah.
Those ones?
In your studio.
In the studio? Yeah.
It's kitchen studio? Yeah. Hmm. Well, I'm surely impressed with
yeah, well, you know, you would
thank you so much for building it.
You guys are working out.
Had mentioned the bushwhacker, but anybody that's listening right now has no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, that
about.
Was my favorite tool of the fall there.
Okay. Well, what is it?
Everybody,
well, they should have been Googling it while they were listening.
Okay.
They should be on my website right. Looking for the bushwhacker.
Yeah, absolutely. Man.
So anyways, you make so the one I have is that's not a two-handled one. That's a two-hand.
I mean, I guess you could, if you were really swinging at a tree, you could
but
two-handed.
But you make a bigger one too, don't you?
I think you have the big one. You've got the same size as this one here.
Mine is like
us, right?
This one.
Yeah, that's the big one.
That's the big one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of Ian, he actually did make me make one even bigger, and I don't want to make them that big ever again.
Wow, he's a big guy.
This one looks like a knife in his hand. He's mm-hmm. Ian's a big dude, yeah. Mm-hmm. But the bigger one that he got was, these ones are 1/4-inch thick steel. His was 3/8
wow.
thick. I burnt through. Back then I was cutting them out with zip discs.
Yeah.
And I think I went through 4 just cutting the shape out of it. It was,
wow.
So I'm not doing that again. But these ones are working out really well.
Well, I love mine, and I did lots of, I put it through its tests there this fall between slash and trail.
I saw that. Yeah. You sent me some pictures.
Yeah. Cutting moose up and, you know, chopping. I was even chopping firewood with it, you know, and that. So
the way those guys came about, friends of mine and I have a property and we were just clearing brush and trail. And it's an old property that had been logged years ago, so it's full of cottonwood saplings and alder and just the worst kind of brush. Mm-hmm. And so we had machetes, which are great. They have a nice long blade, but mm-hmm. they're thin and flimsy. Mm-hmm. And then we had axes, which are heavy and, mm-hmm. and push through a stick or a limb or whatever, but the blade on them is so short. Mm-hmm. And so neither of those was really working with any effectiveness. So I kind of came up with this shape, and I guess to try to describe it, it's got the large one that you've got has a 7-inch blade on it, and it's 1/4-inch thick, and then it's got a full handle. The whole thing overall length on that's 21 inches, mm-hmm. and it's got an oak handle and a lanyard, and they come with a leather sheath, and basically it's just a nice long cutting edge, like an axe chisel grind on it, with a lot of weight behind it to just the momentum carries it through limbs and sapling.
It's a hybrid axe machete brush cutter
meat cleaver.
Yeah, cleaver. The cleaning a moose was a new use for it. That was exciting to find out.
Yeah. Well, I threw the brisket, chop great, nice.
Oh, I imagine ribs, just whap.
Chop all the ribs off. Yeah, it was great. Yeah. Definitely got to watch on the harder bone, like a leg bone and stuff.
Yeah, it won't go through those.
No, it'll go through, but it'll chip the blade. But
well, that'll damage just about anything. It'll short of a chainsaw. Anything,
yeah.
You know,
like, yeah. Yeah.
That voids your warranty.
Yeah.
So, rocks and leg bones.
But through the ribs, through the brisket, through the neck, chop the head off, no problem.
Wow, cool.
You know, and any hide in between. Yeah,
yeah, right on.
So, but no, I'm super impressed with mine, and I love it. It's on the, it just stays in my truck. And
yeah, that's the perfect place for them, the truck or the quad.
Yeah.
I make a smaller one too. It's got a 6-inch cutting edge on it, and it is 16 inches overall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more for it fits in a backpack. It's mm-hmm. a little easier to trek around with if you're hiking.
I'd like to have one just in the kitchen.
Yeah, sure.
Chopping shit
what
up.
The hell are you chopping that you need that for the kitchen?
Chopping chickens and...
Jesus. And shit.
And stuff.
Just stuff.
Celery.
Cucumbers.
We'll call it the kitchen fucker.
Celery.
It's a kitchen fucker.
Yeah.
Trademark.
Anyways, I like mine. Thank you for building it for me. And
yeah, the knives are great. The bushwhacker's fabulous. Mm-hmm. So where do you see yourself in 5 years? Like, what are you shooting for here?
I try not to plan that far. Still doing it, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Cool. I just finally am setting up a new shop.
We've seen that. I've seen some pictures.
Yeah, my shed I work out of, it's not insulated, so the last few winters have been a little chilly. It slows down production pretty good.
Right.
So, I bought a sea can, and I've been framing it up and insulating the inside, and I'm going to have it all wired, and all the tools are going to have their own spot.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I've got like a 4-foot long workbench, and anytime I need a tool, I have to move everything out of the way and unpack my tool and set it up.
Yeah. So my workbench is a disaster.
Yeah. I'm excited for that. That space is going to be great. So, hopefully, it's worth the investment, and I'm still doing it 5 years from now. It'd be great.
Oh, yeah, sure. I think so.
Well, anytime you can help, you know, buy tools that speed things up and help, you know. It's always a great...
Yeah, as long as the market keeps up.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't see any end in it.
Another cool thing that I see, your raffles there.
Yeah, the raffles are doing really well. People like those.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. I'll
And the easiest way for anybody to see that is a Facebook site, isn't it?
Facebook or Instagram. Yeah.
Right, Instagram, yeah.
Instagram, yeah. Those two are the most... My most used, I guess, social networks.
Right.
And I'm always trying to keep up with photos and videos and stuff on them, but yeah, the raffles go really well. Usually tickets are $20 American or $25 Canadian, and sell a bunch, and mm-hmm. someone gets lucky and gets a knife.
Cool. Yeah. Great idea.
It's fun. Yeah,
fabulous idea. I should sell hunts that way.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Raffle hunts.
Yeah,
might take a while. Cool.
It's it's a good way for someone who maybe doesn't have, because a handmade custom knife is, it's not going to be your $30-$40 department store knife. So mm-hmm. it's a great way for someone who only wants to maybe toss out $20 for a chance. And it's kind of fun to watch it happen and hope. And I enter raffles all the time too, for friends of mine, and that it's always fun. It's worth mm-hmm. the, it's worth a little suck in the tummy. So I also make a $100 knife that's fully handmade and everything too, for that kind of, just to keep someone from going to Canadian Tire and grabbing a crappy knife. They can.
Yeah, but you know, a knife, for one, we all know that knives, as far as it goes to anybody out there in the backcountry, a knife is probably your number one most important tool. Mm-hmm. That's a tool you do not want to have give up on you. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you break it or what, even just the ability to keep an edge on it. If you find yourself stuck out there, that's when whatever that cheap ass blade that you picked up, you're going to wish you didn't.
Well, it's an investment. Like if you're picking up a whole suit full of camo and your $1,200 rifle, and you're spending some money to go away for the weekend, and
yep,
you don't want to be showing up with a $30 knife.
Mm-hmm. No, and the other thing is that we build memories with these knives, and this is something that you can pass down. This is something that you can, you know, hand over to your son or your daughter or whoever. And
I've had a few customers actually that's really their goal, is make me something that I will be passing down to my grandchildren.
Absolutely.
Those projects are really cool to be a part of. Mm-hmm. Something that's like an heirloom to somebody.
Yeah. No, I see them as that. Mm-hmm. So no, we look forward to testing some more, and we look forward to where you're going to be able to sell some more of these. It's really exciting. I think it's great when it's like a worldwide market, when you've got some traveling, you know, to all these different places. It's super cool and really interesting.
And you do more than just hunting knives too, right? Your kitchen knives are pretty awesome.
Yeah, I've been doing lots of those too. I do a lot of them out of stainless, which holds up nicer in the kitchen.
Yeah,
lots of chef knives, paring knives,
yeah,
carving knives, all kinds of things like that. And yeah, they're.
Do you do like a set?
I can do a set. Yeah. I've been meaning to try to make. Some people have asked for two or three. They'll do like a chef knife, a carving knife, and a paring knife. It's kind of a nice set, and mm-hmm. I've been meaning to come up with like a five piece. I've been kind of rolling around in my head for a nice, a nice set.
Yeah.
They're great gifts. Everyone needs a good kitchen knife. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes a great gift for sure.
I mean, I think everybody went out and bought the amazing Ginsu. It wasn't so amazing when we were done.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. No, you chop through a nail, it's fucked. Yeah.
But you can cut through a soup can.
That's right, a soup can and then a tomato. Have you ever tried that shit? It doesn't work. Yeah. So we'll try that. We'll build an infomercial for you with your kitchen knives. So, yeah, that would be hilarious.
Right here in the studio.
That would be amazing.
We'll test them out and we'll have the kitchen fucker for Sean.
You can do it with the kitchen fucker.
Line up some soup cans.
We can chop an entire beef in half.
Yep. Yeah. And perfect. A soup can.
And a soup can. Tomato when you're done.
Cool. Well, should we
wrap her up?
Wrap this up. So, Mike, you're going to do a little discount.
Yeah. If anyone mentions the podcast, contact me either on Instagram or Facebook or through email. MikeJonesKnifeAndTool@gmail.com and mention the podcast Between Two Racks, and we'll do like a 10% off a custom knife.
Oh wow,
cool!
That's way nice. Thank you.
I gotta message him.
Send me an email.
Well, that is super cool. Thank you so much for stopping by today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This has been fun.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool.
We gotta quit saying cool.
Cool.
We gotta
cool. Cool, dude. Hey.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we look forward to using your knives for many years to come yet, and we're gonna keep talking about them.
Yeah,
you know, they seem to come up.
Keep the photos coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
We started a new tag on Instagram that's called Bush Fucked, and so anytime someone's got a photo that they've of something they've smashed through with a bush fucker, they post it on Instagram and tag it with.
Yeah, Sean's wheels are just a cranking.
Yeah.
You got some chickens out there.
Share how you've been using them. It's
Hashtag bushfucked.
Hashtag, right. Yeah, share how you're using my knives and stuff. I like to see how
trapping season's coming up, so I'll definitely be using mine a lot for clearing brush and building sets and
fucking bushes.
Fucking bushes, yeah. Alrighty.
This podcast may be rated R.
Yeah. Most are. Most of them are.
So
That's it, eh?
Alrighty.
Okay. Stay hard, guys.
Stay hard, my friend.
Stay hard.
Stay hard.